All right, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 657 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And today's podcast, we're going to be continuing the series on our Occupational Medicine Board review. And again, you know, we've done the OSHA-led standard, OSHA, asbestos standard. Those are pretty high yield. Now we're going to do another pretty high yield standard called the OSHA crystalline silica standard, right? So again, I'm going to talk about a lot of things that I think are very important to know for your exams, right? So let's just jump right into it, right? So again, we're going to focus on the OSHA crystalline silica standard, right? They love to test this on the exams. It's on the OCMED exam blueprint. You got to know this stuff, right? They love to test this. It's a very common hazardous exposure. It's a very common occupational lung disease. So if you're sitting for the boards, you want to make sure you know this stuff and you know this code, right? So let's start with some context, right? So the thing is, crystalline silica is one of the most abundant minerals on Earth, right? You find it in quartz, you know, which makes up a pretty big chunk of the Earth's crust, right? You find it in cristobalite, in tridymite, right? And those are higher temperature forms of silica that you encounter in a lot of industrial processes, right? So the thing is, when you, rock or concrete or brick or mortar, you know, is cut, is ground, is drilled, is blasted, it generates fine respirable silica particles, right? Those particles are the hazard, right? And the thing is, OSHA, they finalized their current silica standard in March of 2016, you know, after years and years and years of rulemaking. This is why the OSHA silica, OSHA standards take a long time to change. The federal rulemaking process is extremely long, literally takes years, sometimes decades, right? So it replaced an older standard that had been on the books since like 1971, right? So the OPL, you know, it was based on some really outdated formula, you know, that permitted exposures that these days were like, wait, why did we do that back in the day, right? They're like clearly harmful, right? So the new rule lowered the PEL significantly, right? And added, you know, medical surveillance, exposure control planning, hazard communication requirements that were not there before, right? So compliance deadlines were June 2017 for construction and June 2018 for general industry and maritime, right? And there are two separate standards you need to know, right? So there's general industry, that's 29 Code of Federal Regulations 1910.1053. And then construction is 29 Code of Federal Regulations 1926.1153, right? Maritime actually falls under the general industry standards, right? So for the boards, you need to know both standards, you know, because they share the same exposure limits, medical surveillance requirements. But construction, though, they have a kind of a unique compliance pathway. We call that table one. I'm going to talk about table one in a bit, right? So let's talk about the PEL and the action level, right? You know that these are the, let's get to the numbers, right? These are the highest yield values on the board exam, right? You need to commit them to memory right now, right? So what's the OSHA PEL for respirable crystalline silica? It's 50 micrograms per cubic meter, right? Measured as an 8-hour time-weighted average, right? The action level is half of that, 25 micrograms per cubic meter. And again, these values, they apply to the respirable fraction, right? So basically particles that are small enough to get into your alveoli, right? Generally, they tend to be like less than 10 microns in aerodynamic diameter, right? So again, just to summarize, 50 micrograms per meter cubed is the OSHA PEL, right? If you exceed the OSHA PEL, you need to institute engineering controls. It's required. If the action level is 25 micrograms per meter cubed, right? So if you go above this level, it's going to trigger monitoring and medical surveillance. And then remember, the NIOSH REL actually for crystalline silica is 50 micrograms per meter cubed as well. It's identical to the OSHA PEL, right? And then the ACGIH, the American Council of Government Industrial Hygienists, right? So their TLV for silica is actually 25 micrograms per meter cubed, right? That matches the OSHA action level, not the OSHA PEL. Remember, the OSHA PEL is 50. So there's a board trap here that I think is kind of worth flagging, right? So the ACGIH TLV for respirable crystalline silica is 25, right? That's the same number as the OSHA action level, right? Again, I'm repeating this just to kind of get this in your brains, right? It's not the OSHA PEL, right? So question, they may give you exposure data and ask, hey, which threshold has been crossed, right? We may ask you to compare the OSHA and the ACGIH standards, right? Again, know the organization that matches which number, right? So again, remember, the action level, it triggers specific obligations, right? Even when the PEL has not been exceeded, right? So specifically, right, once you're exposed to at or above the action level for 30 or more days per year, the employer must initiate exposure monitoring, medical surveillance, and all those things, which I'll talk about later, right? But at or above the PEL of 50 micrograms per cubic meter, you need to institute engineering and administrative controls, right? They become mandatory, right? And you must have a written, this is very important, you must have a written exposure control plan. It must be in place, right? Now, if engineering controls cannot reduce exposure below the PEL, then respiratory protection is then required as, you know, kind of supplemental protection. So let's talk about this infamous table one that I talked about, you know, earlier on. Like what's table, like what in the world is table one, right? So this is something that just applies to the construction standard, right? So it's a feature that actually doesn't exist for general industry, but it is board testable, table one. So what is table one? Table one is pretty much like a list of like 18 specific construction tasks, right? You know, like handheld power sawers, jackhammers, handheld grinders, torque point grinders, core drilling, right? You know, along with the engineering controls for each of these tasks, right? So it's like you have a specific task, and then the engineering control required for that specific task, you know, depending on, you know, like wet dust suppression methods, local exhaust ventilation, or both, right? Now, the thing is, when an employer uses the equipment specified in table one, right, and they implement the controls that correspond to that piece of equipment, they're actually presumed to be in compliance with the PEL, right? So one critical thing to know here is that if you're doing these things, then no air monitoring is required. Again, if you're following table one correctly, right? This is something called objective data compliance. Objective data compliance. But if the employer does not use table one, or if table one doesn't cover the specific task that they, you know, that is being performed at that job, then you need to do full air monitoring, right? Just as in general industry, right? Just as in general industry, okay? And the monitoring, you know, results then dictate what additional controls are needed, as I've described, right? So again, remember table one, it's only available under the construction standard, not for general industry. Kind of deals with about 18 specific tasks, right? Specifies, you know, again, water suppression, local exhaust ventilation, right? And again, if you comply with table one, it eliminates the requirement for air monitoring, right? And if table one is not followed, you need to do air monitoring, right? And the employer must also provide respirators during table one tasks, right? If that task specifies that, hey, that's one of the things you should do. All right, so now let's talk about exposure assessment in general industry. So we've talked about construction. Let's talk about exposure assessment in general industry, right? So in general industry, the employer has to conduct initial exposure assessments for literally all workers who may be exposed to silica, right? So an initial exposure assessment has to be done for people that may be exposed to silica, right? You can do this by, you know, measuring the air monitoring in the person's personal breathing zone, right? Or you can do through objective data. So, you know, like published data, you know, there's published data on these things, right? Or historical monitoring results, or, you know, industry characterization studies, you know, that show exposures below the action level, right? So the thing is, if the initial result from your initial monitoring comes back below the action level of 25 micrograms per cubic meter, then you can stop monitoring there. You don't have to do any periodic monitoring after that, unless the job conditions change. But if the result is at or above the action level but below the PEL, then you need to repeat monitoring every 6 months. Every 6 months. So above action level, below PEL, every 6 months. But if the result is at or above the PEL of 50 micrograms per cubic meter, then you need to repeat monitoring every what? 3 months, right? So remember, this is that initial monitoring, right? Now, in all cases, you need to notify your workers. In all of these cases, you need to notify your workers of the exposure results within 15 working days of you getting those results, right? So again, remember, the monitoring frequency, below action level, no periodic monitoring is required, at or above the action level, but below the PEL, right? So 25 to 50, right? Every 6 months, at or above the PEL, right? So 50 or greater, every 3 months, and you need to notify your workers of the results within 15 working days, right? So now let's talk about the medical surveillance requirements, right? So if you go under medical surveillance, right, like what is involved there, right? And again, I think this is one of the most commonly tested things on the boards. Like what triggers medical surveillance, right? So the trigger is going to be an employee who is or will be, right, you know, occupationally exposed to respirable crystalline silica at or above the action level. Again, 25 micrograms per meter cubed for 30 or more days per year, right? Guys, this 30-day threshold is extremely important, right? It is a calendar year count of days, right? So not like cumulative hours calculation. So if you do silica generating work on 30 separate days in a year, even if each day is only part-time exposure, you meet the threshold, right? You meet the threshold, as long as you get in your 30 days, right? So what does that initial exam consist of? Well, it consists of It must be completed within 30 days of initial assignment, right? Or if it's a worker that has already been employed, within 30 days of the date, the, you know, standard became applicable to that employer, right? You need to start doing medical examination. You need to do the medical surveillance, right? So what does this include? Well, it includes a medical and work history, right? And we're going to emphasize, you know, respiratory symptoms, prior dust exposures, tobacco use, right? And other relevant comorbidities, right? And then we need to do a physical, we're going to focus on the respiratory system, right? We're going to do spirometry, right? Specifically FEV1, FVC, right? You know, we want to establish some baseline lung function. And then you're going to do a chest radiograph. And that has to be interpreted by a NIOSH certified B reader using the ILO classification system, right? And then on the initial exam, you need to do a tuberculin skin test or an interferon gamma release assay, right? Tuberculin skin test or interferon gamma release assay. You're going to see why as we continue in this podcast, right? And then after the initial exam, you need to do periodic exams every 3 years. They're required every 3 years, right? Not annually, right? This is a common wrong answer on board questions with silica. You do every 3 years, right? And the exam components, they remain the same, you know, history, physical, spirometry, you know, chest X-ray OB reader interpretation, right? So you got to keep those in mind, right? And remember, again, TB, you need to check for TB, right? Especially on that initial exam, TB checking is really, really important, right? So now the thing is, if the person is being reassigned or terminated from their job, the employer must offer them an exam, you know, when the worker is being reassigned away from a silica exposed work, right? Or they are being terminated from their employment, right? They need to do like a termination exam, right? But this is only required if they've not had a compliant exam within the past 3 years, right? So now let's talk about this B-REIT system and, you know, the ILO classification system. I'm not going to go into depth on this. It's not tested in a ton of detail, but you need to know some of it, right? Some of it is IO, right? So remember the ILO classification of radiographs, right? Is the system that is used to standardize, honestly, the reading of chest X-rays for dust-related lung disease, right? NIOSH certified B-reader is basically a physician that has passed a qualifying exam, you know, there's an exam you have to take, you know, that demonstrates proficiency in this classification system. So it pretty much classifies small opacities by shape and profusion. Shape and profusion, right? So the shape is going to be described as, you know, rounded, you know, and they use the letters like P, Q, and R for increasing sizes, right? Or you can also describe them as irregular, and we use the letters S, T, and U, right? So rounded, P, Q, R, irregular, S, T, U. And then profusion is kind of graded on a 12-point scale from, you know, 0/0, meaning no opacities, to 3/+, which is like the highest profusion, right? Large opacities, you know, they're classified as category A, B, or C based on the accumulative size, right? Again, you don't need to know a ton about this, but just make sure you know the word shape, know the words profusion and things like that, right? So for silicosis specifically, the classic pattern on chest radiography, right, is upper lobe predominant, you know, small rounded opacities, right? And then you may see eggshell calcifications of the hilar lymph nodes, right? So eggshell calcifications, when you see it on a board question, it's pathognomonic for silicosis, although sarcoidosis can also cause that, but think silicosis, right? So in the context of occupational exposure, think of silicosis, right? And then after you do the medical exam, right, the healthcare provider sends a written opinion to the employer, right? But this is a critical confidentiality point you need to know for your test, right? The written opinion, it may only include the following. Right? So confirmation that the exam was performed, any limitations on the worker's exposure to silica, and a statement on, hey, you're going to need follow-up, yes or no, right? The provider cannot include specific findings or diagnoses or clinical details to the employer without the worker's written consent. If the worker doesn't give you written consent, can't do it, right? So again, this mirrors the confidentiality framework that you see across many of the OSHA medical surveillance standards. So now let's kind of talk about, you know, some clinical stuff with silica, right? So what are the three forms of silicosis, right? There are three clinical forms. And the thing is, the boards, they expect you to know all three, right? You need to be able to distinguish them by exposure type, latency, radiographic, clinical features, right? So let's kind of go through those, right? So chronic silicosis is the most common, right? And, you know, it's the classic one, right? You get it from low level prolonged exposure. Latency is typically more than 10 years, right? And the key features, you're going to see, you know, upper lobe nodules, you know, eggshell hilar calcification of your lymph nodes, right? And it may progress after you've been removed from silica exposure. And then the second big type of clinical silicosis is the accelerated form, right? You typically get this from moderate to high level exposure. Latency is like 5 to 10 years, right? And you're in these people, you're going to have like just rapid progression of the nodules, upper lobe predominant disease, right? And these people, unfortunately, they have a high risk of something known as PMF, progressive massive fibrosis, right? And then the third distinct clinical silica picture you should know for your test is acute silica exposure. Sometimes they call this silicoproteinosis, right? So this usually happens when you have like very high intensity exposure. The latency is like weeks to 5 years, right? You're going to see ground glass opacities, you know, crazy paving pattern on a CT. Keep that buzzword in mind, crazy paving pattern on a CT, right? You know, and it's rapidly fatal, right? And the stuff that fills up the alveoli is going to be positive, right? Periodic acid shift positive, right? This is rapidly fatal, right? So again, don't forget, chronic silicosis, most common form, you know, years after low level exposure, again, pathognomonic finding, bilateral upper lobe nodules, right? Hilar lymph nodes, you're going to see peripheral calcium deposits, right? Kind of looks like a ring. That's where the term eggshell calcification comes from, right? So you see a board question that shows upper lobe, you know, an upper lobe nodular pattern with eggshell hilar, you know, calcification like in a coal miner, a sandblaster, or stone cutter. That's silicosis until proven otherwise, right? Now, acute silicosis, right? You know, again, like the worst one, right? Silicoproteinosis is the most severe, right? So basically, it results from just overwhelming exposure over a very short time frame, right? Radiographically, it actually looks like something called a pulmonary alveolar proteinosis, right? You're going to see bilateral ground glass opacities, and you're going to see, again, the crazy paving pattern. Look this up, the crazy paving pattern on CT, right? So histologically, your alveoli are going to be filled with, again, PAS positive, you know, proteinaceous material, right? Progresses rapidly to respiratory failure, right? Fatal within months to a few years, right? It's really bad. It's really bad, right? Now, I just want to maybe comment on this thing called PMF, progressive massive fibrosis, right? PMF, right? Basically, this happens when silicotic nodules, they kind of come together into like large opacities, right? So the ILO, they define PMF as opacities greater than 1 centimeter in diameter, right? These are large opacities, right? You know, large opacities, right? You know, they're going to be graded as A, B, or C on the ILO scale, right? A is like less than 5 centimeters combined. B is, you know, larger opacities. And then C is like, wow, this thing occupies more than 1/3 of the lung field, right? That's obviously like super bad, right? Now, PMF, you know, people that have PMF, their FEV1 is going to start tanking very, very quickly, right? And it's actually the leading cause of death in silicosis. This is high yield. The leading cause of death in silicosis is progressive massive fibrosis, right? Now, one thing I've noticed that the boards love to test with silicosis is that they love to test some systemic and associated conditions with silicosis, right? So what are the clinical sequelae of silica exposure, right? What are these clinical sequelae that, you know, are beyond the classic silicosis of the lungs that the boards love to test? Well, let's talk about these associations, right? The first one is lung cancer, right? In fact, IARC classifies crystalline silica as a group 1 carcinogen, right? Group 1 carcinogen in the context of silicosis, right? Again, the mechanism is not fully understood, but we know that silica causes chronic inflammation of the lungs. You generate reactive oxygen species, it impairs DNA repair, right? So again, board questions, they do require you to know the IR classification. It's class 1, right? Now, what's the next association with silicosis? Think of TB, right? Silica, and what's the mechanism here? This is something we do understand, right? Silica, it's toxic to your alveolar macrophages, right? And the thing is, your alveolar macrophages, they're super important, right? They're like the primary immune defense against Mycobacterium tuberculosis, right? So you have a worker of silicosis, you know, they have an approximately like threefold increased threshold risk of developing active TB compared to the general population, right? So this is the biological rationale behind like us doing like TB testing in the medical surveillance protocol, right? So the boards may give you a scenario of a sandblaster or miner with a new pulmonary infiltrate and expect you to basically say that, hey, this person's got TB, right? Now, what's another thing associated with silicosis? Think of autoimmune disease, right? Silica exposure is associated with scleroderma, right? You know, sometimes we call that systemic sclerosis, right? Also, silica exposure is associated with rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, right? So lupus, RA, and scleroderma, right? The scleroderma link, I'll say, is probably the one that is the most well-established, most commonly boards tested, right? You know, Kaplan syndrome, where you have like rheumatoid arthritis, you know, with large pulmonary nodules in a pneumoconiosis patient, right? It can also occur with silicosis, right? So many people think that Kaplan syndrome only occurs in coworkers. No. It can also occur with silicosis, right? So classically it's described in coworkers, but it can absolutely occur in silicosis as well. That's something you definitely want to make sure you know for your exams, right? And then another silica association is renal disease, right? So silica exposure can lead to the development of glomerulonephritis, right? Probably through some immune-mediated mechanism or whatever, right? They don't test this as commonly, but you should just kind of slot that into your brain for your exams, right? And then COPD, right? Silica can also cause obstructive lung disease, independent of tobacco use, right? So you have workers with high exposures. They may actually develop airflow obstruction, believe it or not, even if they don't have visible nodular disease on a chest x-ray. Now, let's talk about high-risk industries, right? Because again, many times on these board exams, they'll give you like some industry, and then based on the industry or the task that is described, you need to figure out like, hey, this is the potential exposure, right? So occupations that are at high risk for silica exposure, right, are going to be things like sandblasting, abrasive blasting, construction workers that operate like jackhammers, grinders, people that use saws on concrete or masonry, tunnel workers, that's a high-yield one to know, right? Foundry workers, miners, people that do pottery, ceramics, right? Glass manufacturers, right? And then a big one, it's like an emerging topic on the exam, right? People that fabricate countertops, right? The engineered stone countertop industry is like a special one you should definitely know for your exams, right? Because it's an emerging problem, right? It's an emerging problem, appears on board exams, right? So the thing is, engineered stone, we call that, like quartz, artificial stone, right? Is manufactured from literally like 90 to 95% crystalline silica, right? So when fabricators cut, grind, polish these slabs, they are generating extremely high concentrations of respirable silica, right? So this is a big problem, right? And we're seeing, many cases of rapidly progressive fatal silicosis in young workers in the US, in Israel, in Australia, in Spain. And you're seeing latencies of only like 2 to 5 years, right? So this is kind of a big problem, right? So these workers, they developed, accelerated or acute silicosis at ages well under age 40. So you're like, what's going on here, right? Yeah. So the thing is, NIOSH, they've actually issued a lot of like hazard alerts, and OSHA has been doing a lot of enforcement in this sector, right? So if a board question describes a young countertop fabricator with rapidly progressive lung disease and a short occupational history, think of engineered stone silicosis, right? Now, let's talk about hazard communication with silica, right? So the thing is, the OSHA silica standard actually requires employers to provide training to all workers that are exposed at or above the action level, right? Now, this training must cover things like the health hazards of silica, which operations generate exposure, right? What are the specific controls in place? What's the purpose of medical surveillance, right? And how do you use and maintain the required respirators, right? And you must also have a written exposure control plan. It is actually required. It must be at the work site, right? It must describe, hey, what are the regulated areas? What are the regulated operations? What are the engineering controls? What are the work practices? What's the respiratory protection in use, right? What are the housekeeping measures that are employed, right? In construction, if you're using table one, that famous table one I talked about, right? The written plan is going to document the tasks and it's going to map them to the table one controls, right? So again, regulated areas, you need to establish them, when the exposures exceed the PEL, right? So again, these regulated areas, right, the access is kind of restricted. It's going to be restricted to authorized workers, authorized supervisors, right? Eating, drinking, using tobacco in these regulated areas, not acceptable, right? So don't forget about hazard communication, training, and this reading exposure control plan with silica. Now, let's talk about respiratory protection with silica, right? So respiratory protection, right, is the last line of defense after engineering and administrative controls, right? So the standard follows the hierarchy of controls, right? So again, elimination first, then substitution, then engineering controls, then administrative controls, then respiratory protection, right? Respirators are never a substitute for good engineering controls, right? So when respirators are required, right, the selection is based on the airborne concentration of silica, relative to the PEL, right? And the EPF, the assigned protection factor, right? So if you have exposures that are up to 10 times the PEL, you need to use a half face air purifying respirator with a P100 particulate filter, right? That provides like an EPF of 10, right? EPF of 10, right? So again, let's highlight this, right? Exposures up to 10 times the PEL, you need a half face respiring respirator, right, with an APF of 10, you know, with a P100 particulate filter. Again, these specific details, those are the annoying things that our friends at the boards do want you to know, right? But if you have higher concentrations, then you need to use a full face respirator, right, with an APF of 50, right? Or you can use a PAPR, a purified air purifying respirator, with an APF of 25 to 1,000, you know, depending on the type, right? Now, all the respirator you use, you know, with silica, remember, it has to comply with the OSHA respiratory protection standard, right? Remember, that's a 29 Code of Federal Regulations 1910.134, right? You know, it has to comply with that. It has to comply with that. You need to do like your fit testing, your training and all that stuff, right? So, what if they give you a question about like a 52-year-old man, you know, comes to your occupational medicine clinic for a surveillance exam, you know, he is, you know, worked as a foundry mold maker for 22 years, right? He's saying that, hey, you know, I have some exertional dyspnea over the last 2 years, but, you know, he says that, I'm getting older and I also smoke, right? You know, they tell you that he has like a 30-pack year tobacco history, just quit 5 years ago. And then you're told that spirometry reveals like a mild restrictive pattern, you know, with an FVC that is 72% of predicted, FEV1 to FVC of 0.82. Right? And then they tell you that a chest x-ray shows bilateral upper lobe small rounded opacities with a profusion of two slash one on ILO classification, right? And then they tell you that, hey, hilar lymph nodes, they enlarged, there's peripheral calcification, right? So the eggshell calcifications, if you may, right? And then they ask, which of the following is the most appropriate next step in management, right? And they give you an answer that says, hey, reassure the patient that these spirometry findings are fine, right? Or they give you an answer that says, hey, refer for CT-guided lung biopsy to confirm the diagnosis. Or they say, hey, do an interferon gamma release assay for TB, right? Or they say, hey, start corticosteroid therapy for hypersensitivity pneumonitis, right? Or they say, you know what, refer to pulmonology for bronchoscopy with BAL. What should you do here? Well, I would hope you're saying, okay, divine, I'm going to do option C, right? I'm going to do the third option, right? This is classic chronic silicosis in a foundry worker, right? So they have this upper lobe predominant, you know, small rounded opacities, right? ILO profusion of 2/1, right? That's significant silicosis, right? And again, you see the eggshell calcifications, right? It's pathognomonic, right? So you don't need to do a biopsy to diagnose silicosis, right? You have the occupational exposure history. You have the consistent radiographic pattern, right? The spirometry, again, is showing a restrictive pattern, which is pretty characteristic of silicosis, right? So what's going to be your next step? Test for TB, right? Remember, silicosis increases your risk of TB by threefold, your risk of active TB by threefold, you know, because again of the macrophage dysfunction, right? So remember, the medical surveillance standard specifically mandates, hey, test for TB for this very reason, right? So you can do an interferon gamma release assay or TB skin test, right? If it's positive, then you should recommend, you should offer treatment for latent TB infection, right? Because again of the elevated risk of reactivation compared to the general population, right? So keep that in mind. All right. So what if they give you a question about like some general contractor, you know, he has 35 employees and they do, you know, concrete cutting, they do demolition work, right? And then an industrial hygienist, you know, you're told in the question that you have some industrial hygienist, he's done like personal breathing zone sampling for, you know, respirable, you know, crystalline silica, right? And then the results show that, hey, 8 workers, they have an 8-hour time-weighted average exposure ranging from 28 to 46 micrograms per meter cubed, right? The remaining workers are below 20 micrograms per meter cubed, right? And you're told that, hey, this employer currently has no medical surveillance program in place. What should you do? Right. So, in fact, let me put it this way. Let me give you a few statements. And then what are the employer's obligations? Right. Let's pick one from this. Right. So option A, you know, they say, you know, hey, no, they tell you because no worker has exceeded the PEL of 50 micrograms per meter cubed, no engineering controls or medical surveillance is required. Option B. Right. Hey, 8 workers with exposures at or above 25 micrograms per meter cubed must be enrolled in the medical surveillance program if they work 30 or more days per year in silica exposed tasks. Option C. All 35 workers must be enrolled in medical surveillance because silica work is being performed at the site. Option D, medical surveillance is only required if a worker develops symptoms of silicosis. Option E, the employer can just defer medical surveillance until a repeat sample confirms elevated exposures. What should you do here? I would hope you're picking option B, right? So this question basically is testing the action level trigger, right, for medical surveillance, right? So remember, under both the general industry and construction silica standards, medical surveillance is required for any employee who is or will be exposed at or above the action level of 25 micrograms per meter cubed for 30 or more days per year, right? 8 of the workers have exposures between 28 and 46, right? So they're above the action level, right? If they perform the work on 30 or more days annually, medical surveillance is mandatory, regardless of whether they exceed the PL or not, right? And then answer A is wrong, right? Because exceeding the action level, not just the PEL, is what triggers these obligations, right? C is wrong because, you know, the threshold is the action level exposure, not simply just being on a silica work site, right? The trigger is being above the action level, right? Answer D is wrong because medical surveillance is a preventive program, right? It's a preventive program. It's not a response to symptoms, right? And then option E is wrong, right? Because the sampling results already confirm that the action level is exceeded in 8 workers, right? So you need to do medical surveillance for the 8 workers, right? Now, what if they give you a question about like a 34-year-old man, you know, he's referred to your clinic, you know, he has a 6-month history of progressive dyspnea, cough, 10-pound weight loss, right? And you're told that he immigrated from Central America 4 years ago. And since he arrived in the US, he's been working as a stone fabricator at a countertop manufacturing facility, right? And then you're told he does not smoke, and chest CT shows, you know, bilateral perihilar, ground glass opacities, crazy paving pattern, no discrete nodules, right? And then you're told that PFTs reveal like severe restrictive defect, you know, markedly reduced DLCO, right? And then they tell you that, hey, you do a bronchoalveolar lavage and you see PS positive, you know, lipoproteinaceous material, and the serum LDH is markedly elevated, any antibody, anti-GBM antibodies are negative, right? What's going to be the most likely diagnosis, right? Option A, hypersensitivity pneumonitis from occupational antigen exposure. Option B, pulmonary alveolar proteinosis secondary to silica exposure. Option C, sarcoidosis. Option D, chronic silicosis. Option E, good pasture syndrome, right? I really hope you're saying that, Divine, this is going to be answer B, right? So this vignette is pretty much describing acute silicosis, right? You know, sometimes it's called silicoproteinosis, right? In a young countertop fabricator, right? So remember, engineered stone slabs, as I said, right? Very high crystalline silica content, right? Like literally like 90 to 95%, right? And fabrication generates very high respirable silica concentrations, right? So the short latency, you know, this person has just, you know, been working for like 4 years, you know, combined with the alveolar filling pattern on CT, the crazy paving appearance, right? PS positive material on bronchoalveolar lavage, right? Severe restrictive defect, that tells us that, wait, this is acute silicosis, right? Remember, you know, the other answer, sarcoidosis, is going to show lymphadenopathy, granulomas, different clinical course, right? Not this, you know, like crazy rapid, and it's not going to show like the crazy paving or whatever, right? Hypersensitivity pneumonitis, right? It's going to be a person that typically is working with like organic antigens, you know, like they're working in a barn or something like that, right? Chronic silicosis is going to show like discrete upper lobe nodules, right? Not an alveolar filling pattern. Good pasture syndrome is, you know, involves anti-glomerular basement membrane antibodies, right? And you'll have hemoptysis, right? So again, don't forget, engineered stone exposure connects it to acute silicosis, right? And again, know that the pathology mirrors something called a pulmonary alveolar proteinosis, right? So again, let's just do a quick summary to kind of wrap this up. Right? So again, remember, the PEL is, so if you're like, oh, Divine, what are 10 things I got to know about silica before my exams? You got to lock this in your brain, right? So PEL, 50 micrograms per meter cubed, right? 8-hour time weighted average, you know, the action level is 25 micrograms per meter cubed, right? So it's half that, right? The ECGH TLV, right, is 25 micrograms per meter cubed. So this is the second thing you want to know. ECGH TLV, 25 micrograms per meter cubed. It matches the OSHA action level, not the PEL, right? Number three, remember the construction standard and table one. If you comply with table one, you don't need air monitoring, right? Number four, remember, medical surveillance is triggered if you're at or above the action level for 30 plus days a year, right? Number five, the periodic exams are going to be every 3 years, not annually, right? And includes pyrometry, chest x-ray that should be read by a B reader, right? And a TB test, right? And then number six, remember, the employer written opinion, it should not include the diagnosis or specific clinical findings. Number seven, know your forms of silicosis, right? The chronic one that's more than 10 years, the accelerated one that has a latency of 5 to 10 years, and then the acute form that is weeks to 5 years, right? And then number seven, right? Remember, acute silicosis mimics pulmonary alveolar proteinosis, right? You're going to see PS positive alveolar fillings, right? Crazy paving pattern on CT, right? Number eight, remember, eggshell, peripheral. So they may not use the term eggshell, they may use peripheral hilar calcifications, right? That's pathognomonic, right? And remember, people that have silicosis, they have a threefold increased risk of TB compared to active TB compared to the general population. And then number nine, remember, silica is an IARC group 1 carcinogen, right? And don't forget the very strong association with scleroderma. And then number 10, remember, engineered stone has 90 to 95% crystalline silica, right? Causes accelerated disease in young workers, right? So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, hopefully you find this podcast to be helpful. Well, these things are pretty high yield to know for your test, right? So, God willing, next week or thereabouts, I'll make another podcast on something that is OCMED boards relevant. So thank you for listening to me today. I will see you next time. Have a wonderful week. God bless you and bye for now. All right. Thank you.